Did you know you can get email alerts about every new episode of this podcast? Sign up for free. Just click the link in the show description.
If I can build a copy of myself, but it doesn't do exactly what I do, then the residual is actually what defines me as a human. I believe that the path of building synthetic human beings or synthetic minds is actually a fairly introspective path to understand us in the process of building replicas of us.
This is Kotecki on Tech. I am James Kotecki, here with Max Versace, CEO and co-founder of Neurala. Max, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, James.
Okay, so basically, as I understand it, Neurala uses AI to help computers see and understand images. And I'm doing air quotes around the words see and understand. But is that about right?
That's about right. The company was born as an offshoot of Boston University. Our focus was working with NASA and DARPA to build AI for autonomous robotics. Over the years, we have narrowed our focus a little bit more, and that we are mostly targeting visual AI. So the, you know, given the huge number of cameras deployed everywhere in the world today, we are mostly focused on visual object recognition. But you know, slowly as robots become more ubiquitous and drones become more ubiquitous, we are kind of going back to the original building of AI that empowers robots and smart machines.
So the idea would be that anybody who has some kind of products that needs an AI that can do something with an image is they could connect with you, and that you would enable that.
That's correct. If you look back a little bit of the history of humankind, as we get to our century, we are starting to be flooded by machines of all sorts of types, from cars to medical machines to all sorts of consumer devices. But all of them have been mostly stupid until today. So the challenge of the future and AI is how to make those machines smarter so that humans don't have to lend their brains to operate those machines, and their bodies, of course, to operate those machines. And these machines can be more useful for us.
Self-driving cars is probably the example of machines needing to visualize their environment that maybe most people are familiar with. What's the range of industries and applications that you're working with? Is it mostly self-driving cars?
Actually, we started with self-driving cars back in 2012. We are not working with them anymore. And the reason is that we realized that the time to market was too long because there were so many regulations and so many misconceptions actually to fight in the public eye, that we decided to go for other application. And today we are deployed for this decision. Today we are successful. We are deployed in about 40 million devices, ranging from cell phone to robots, drones, and other cameras. We kind of steered away from some application where there was a clear technology case, but not so much a proximal business case.
You mentioned misconceptions in the marketplace. You mentioned that was in 2012. Now it's 2019. What are some of the biggest misconceptions that you fought and that you still have to fight today?
I'll be biblical with you. Throw the first stone if you have no sin. So people think that humans are perfect, and they like to throw stones at AI because AI is not perfect. The truth is that we are completely mistaken. In the self-driving car domain, there are plenty of car accidents and plenty of crazy people driving around drunk or on drugs. The part of it is to educate people that first, humans are fallible, and then AI doesn't need to reach 100%, just needs to be in the ballpark of what a human is. Even more, you can put a human-like intelligence in devices where there is no chance that you can hire somebody at $20 per hour to look at the video frame. Some people start to get it, but the premise are sometimes mistaken.
Yeah, so the idea is there's so many applications for which it just is not economically feasible for a human brain to be applied at all. And so applying any kind of intelligence, artificial intelligence, is an improvement on that. When you're playing in those areas, people would never necessarily even perceive that it needs to be at human levels. So maybe it's easier from a business sense to go into the areas where people don't have you kind of competing with humans.
That's true. So for instance, in one application, we are in a robot called Marty the Robot, which is in Stop and Shops, mostly in the United States. So it's in 500 Stop and Shops. The goal of the robot in this particular application was to detect spills on the ground, coffee dropping, and all sorts of things that people might slip into, and that there is a liability for the store if they don't clean it within 20 minutes and so forth. And so what the robot was doing was sending images into a remote location where a human would look at it. As you can imagine, it's like a needle in the haystack. Humans, even if you if you pay them, $20 per hour, they don't want to look at, 1 million frames of clean floor for the occasional spill once every 3 days. So AI will basically substitute the human and filter it out. So there is one person maybe overlooking a fleet of 500 robots and just say, yep, AI, you're right, you detected the spill here. So when you put this in this way, it makes sense for everybody. But you kind of have to disentangle the misconception first and explain clearly what the use case is.
Are people surprised at how good visual AI or machine vision actually is these days? What's the cutting edge of what's possible?
Yeah, so it's interesting. We see the reaction from two kinds of spectrum. The first one is when we show our AI and how easy it is to build and how easy it is to put it on a cell phone and recognize whatever you encounter, they're kind of like amazed, right? They say, oh, wow, I didn't know this was possible. That's amazing. But then quickly they go to the other spectrum, which is, oh, okay, wait, it's only 94% accurate? What about 100%? Mm. They say, oh, well, 30 seconds ago you thought this was impossible and now you want perfection, right? And one of my investors tells me that companies have two problems, those damn employees and those damn customers. So as soon as you show them something is possible, they expect that to be perfect. And that's maybe the expectation needs to be mitigated. Perfection is, it's on its way in terms of approximating human, which is not perfect, as we know. But the technology is a technology, is not a miracle yet.
Yeah, it's funny. We have this phrase, seeing is believing, right? And the idea is that if you see something, it's more real, it's more credible than almost any other way of encountering the world. But of course, we know that even in the very moment that humans are perceiving something visually, they can make mistakes. And so maybe this is also a way of getting back to what you said about understanding ourselves. Maybe part of what this is showing us is that we are imperfect, and we don't honestly like that about ourselves. And maybe that's a bit of the resistance against wanting kind of perfection from the machines when we don't even have it ourselves.
That's right. And what I say in my family is that only my wife is perfect, not me.
Well said. As a machine learning marketer myself, I'm always fascinated with how companies position and message what they do. And another potential misconception is around how AI works. You have what you call the Nirala brain. And so as a marketer, I'm wondering, why did you choose to use the word brain? And how does that clarify things? And how does that maybe even perpetuate some misconceptions about how this works?
Mm. Yeah, so it part of talks about the background and the genesis of the company, the background of the founder. So I am a neuroscientist by formation, right? So I came from the neuroscience background, so the wet science of studying the brain. So the idea of a brain or a copy, simplified copy of a biological brain is where we came from as our background. We never thought of a statistical model when doing neuroscience. We always thought of how does the brain control behavior in a living organism like a human or a rat or a butterfly. And so that stick with us. But it also is very linked to our technology, which having come from the background of biological systems, we design a radically different AI that is able to continuously learn at each interaction with the environment versus traditional machine learning that are more statistically based, which, basically you train them once and you deploy them and then you cannot change. So it's both our roots, but also the technology differentiation.
So this is a really interesting point, because there has been in the past this kind of divide in the AI community, people who believe that we need to look to the human brain for answers about how to build something that's intelligent. And then people who believe, there was that famous phrase, an airplane doesn't flap its wings. In other words, you don't need to look to nature and biology to be able to get the same function, and we should do it through some other way. You're clearly coming out on the side of biology. Is that divide that I'm describing still even a thing, or are you getting respect and kudos from kind of the other side of it? And are you able to look at the other side and say, yeah, that statistical stuff is actually useful in other applications? Or do you still see it as kind of two competing camps?
I still see it as two competing camps. My attitude is really simple. So if you want to build a system that is able to perform in a real world environment, then at least you have to understand what the biological brain does, because it's unbeatable at this particular stage. So I challenge anybody who comes from the statistical pattern classification camp to build something that is better than the human brain, and then I will shut up. But short of that, we still have a lot to learn in terms of capability and efficiency by looking at biological brains. And, maybe the flap the wings and the airplane analogy will be true in 50 years from now, but we are still in the Stone Age of AI and literally on how much we understand of the brain, that it would be a mistake for us to say, screw the brain, I'll do it myself.
Potentially getting back to the idea of misconceptions, though, when you call something a brain, do you have to do some additional education around the limitations of what you're actually building? And of course, this also gets into, and this may be a little bit outside of the business conversations that you have, but certainly in the popular culture, ideas around, building an artificial brain means you're kind of eventually building some kind of sentient entity. Do you ever deal with those kind of people commenting about that?
Very rarely. Mostly, these concerns come up with people outside of the industry. To people in the industry, for instance, right now we were in a conference call with an industrial company in Europe that wants to put these quote brains inside their machines, and this is a these are machines that build 60 things or products per minute. So it's very quick machines, and they have 10 cameras in these machines, and they need AI to do the quality inspection. Nobody that hasn't consumed massive amount of wine will ever tell me, this is the machine gonna be waking up and conquer the factory and then the world. I mean, these are things that detect whether the tea bag has the right shape and form, or whether the peel has a cracked blister or not. I mean, these are very specific AI, but these are the things that solve problems that are important in the industries. I don't know what use there is of a general purpose AI as of today, in my humble opinion.
If you're talking about biology as the precursor for understanding and building intelligence, well, there is also a precedent in biology for a sentient brain, ours, right? And so if you are going down a biological track, it seems to me that if we can one day build sentient machines, and that's a huge if, the biological track would maybe be the one more likely to get us to something that we recognize as sentience, because we are biological ourselves. So do you ever wonder about that? Or is that just kind of so far outside of what you're doing day to day that it doesn't really come up?
Well, in a sense, yes. And in a sense, no. So let me explain it to you. So my past, my background was actually fairly scientific, right? So I when I first joined at the beginning of my career, psychology in Italy, because there was no track in AI or neuroscience, my goal was to understand the pinnacle of the sciences, which I thought is not physics, is not anything else, but is the study of the mind, because the mind, our mind, produces reality and produces the equations that define physics and so forth. So it was my quest was purely philosophical. And for many years, I thought, building AI is actually a sort of building a mirror, a way in which we can look at ourselves. And I can build as close as possible an emulation of the brain and say, maybe that's the way to actually understand what defines us human. Because if I can build a copy of myself, but it doesn't do exactly what I do, then the residual is actually what defines me as a human, right? Mm. And so I believe that the path of building synthetic human beings or synthetic minds is actually a fairly introspective path on a purely philosophical, scientific way, to understand us in the process of building replicas of us. And so to me, it's an exciting quest, not only technological-wise, but also existential and scientific.
Hmm. So you said that you kind of used to think about that. Do you still think about that in the same way, or has running a business that where you have to deal with the actual realities of it kind of changed your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a metaphor. It's like thinking about what you're going to be eating next day when your house is on fire. So I have to focus of not, on my pants not catching fire. Jokes apart, it's a very intensive business, and I have to deal with financing and product and customers. So I think of it, let's put it this way, when I have my time off.
Max Versace is the CEO and co-founder of Neurala. Thanks for joining me on Kotecki on Tech.
Thank you, James.